Dear listeners, Sai Ram. We now bring you Vahini Satsang. Today's episode was first aired on the 12th January 2017 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. So we are continuing deliberating on the first chapter of Prema Vahini, the first Vahini that Bhagwan penned. And as we had mentioned, this is the article with which Bhagwan started sharing his message to mankind. And we had done about one page, so we have done about six paragraphs of this first chapter, and we have the last paragraph to dwell on. So, as always, Sai Prakash is here with me. So, we will listen to the penultimate paragraph and then the last paragraph and spend some time deliberating on it before we move on to the next chapter of Prema Vahini.
Chaddavaru ellapudu chaddavaru gane undaru. Angulimaludane bandipotu donga Budhuni darshana matramuna manchivaduga maraleda. రత్నాకరుడనే దొంగ వాల్మీకిగా మారలేదా? అట్టివారి మానసిక లక్షణములు, ఊహలు మారెను కదా? మానవునకు తన చెడుగుణములు, చెడు ప్రవర్తనలు మార్చుకుని శక్తి వాని వెంటనే ఉండును. నిష్కామ సేవ, వైరాగ్యము, భక్తి, ప్రార్థన, విచారణ కొత్త స్వభావములను నేర్పించును. ఇట్టి స్వభావములు వీని మార్గములు సులభముగా వ్యాఖ్యానించి లోకమునకు చాటుటకే ఇట్టి ఆధ్యాత్మిక గ్రంథములు, కావ్యములు, పత్రికలు ప్రచురించుట. పేరు ప్రతిష్టలకు కాని, విద్యా కౌశలమును చూపుకొనుటకు కాని, పాండిత్యమును ప్రదర్శించుకొనుటకు కాని కాదు.
A bad person will not remain bad always. Did not Angulimala, the dacoit, turn into a good person just by the darshan of Buddha? Did not the thief Ratnakara become Valmiki the sage? Isn't it that such people's habits and character got transformed? Man has within him the capacity to change his evil propensities and evil habits. Selfless service, renunciation, devotion, prayer, inquiry, these will enable inculcation of new swabhava or conduct. In order to lucidly explain to the world this new swabhava and the ways of attaining it, spiritual literature, epics and periodicals are published. It is done not for the exhibition of erudition or showcasing the scholarship or for name and fame.
Kevalam oka grantha patanamu vallane vivekamu alavadadu. Deeniki toduga సంఘత్వము కూడా ఉండవలెను. అదిలేక ఊరక ప్రొద్దును గడుపుకొనుటకు చదువుచుండినా ఆ భావములను ప్రొద్దుతోనే చేరివెళ్ళును. తరువాత నీచెంత నిలచునదేది?
మియర్ రీడింగ్ అ బుక్ విల్ నాట్ వౌచ్ సేఫ్ వివేక ఆర్ డిస్క్రిమినేషన్. ఇట్ షుడ్ బి అకంపనీడ్ బై ప్రాక్టీస్ ఇన్ సొసైటీ. వితౌట్ దిస్, ఇఫ్ ఎనీథింగ్ ఇస్ రెడ్ జస్ట్ టు పాస్ టైమ్, those feelings pass away with the passage of time. Then, is there anything that stays with you?
So, Sai Prakash, if you notice something interesting here in the last paragraph of the first chapter, the mention of the word Viveka, isn't that significant? Because that is what Bhagwan begins with in the first paragraph of Premavaini, the first chapter.
Right.
Where Bhagavan says, out of all bygone yugas, in this Kali age, there are ample ways to obtain viveka, discrimination.
Correct.
Which indeed is glowing effulgently as much as one desires. So this is how Bhagavan begins. And here, Bhagavan then very beautifully concludes that yes, you have so many avenues to obtain viveka, but mere reading will not vouchsafe viveka. It sort of concludes that thought process, and
right,
where Bhagavan so categorically clarifying that it should be accompanied by practice in society.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, one more thing which strikes me, like suppose you were given a topic to write on, and you know, with all the modern techniques that you have to address the topic right and up front, you'll have to build to this thing. In this entire first chapter, there is no word of prema. Like, now I'm really wondering. Of course, there are two possibilities. One is possibly that Swami just wrote these articles and later they were compiled and then into this Prema Vahini. Or did Swami say that I'm going to start writing this article, keeping a collection of these articles as Prema Vahini? Whether the name was, you know, given beforehand or it was given later, one can really not say, because possibly Kasturi uncle would have known that. But nevertheless, there is a deeper connection. In the sense, Swami's, like, you know, we are now thinking of trying to produce videos that bring out Swami's message. We have done Radio Sai for 15 years. We have done website, we have done articles, we have done so many things. But can we also produce videos which are able to kind of bring out his core messages, key messages? One attempt of that was the Message of the Lord series, which we had done,
yes,
for 85th birthday. And although we didn't really have time to produce it well, the script was very well written by Professor Venkatraman, and the concepts are very beautifully presented there. Now, the reason I'm telling all this is, when we are trying to sit and trying to understand what Swami's core message is, the unanimous conclusion is prema.
Yes.
Because Swami has spoken about love, love, love all the time.
Yes.
All the time he has spoken about love. But what exactly is that love? Is it some kind of a passive emotion? Or is it an active emotion? Or is it an emotion? Okay, and also questions come up like, you know, when Swami often says, love through words is satya.
Yes.
Love through action is dharma.
Dharma.
Love, you know, with contentment is shanti.
Yes.
And love prema is prema.
Love
is love.
Love in understanding.
So,
non-violent.
In a sense, Swami would say, love for everybody and love to yourself is ahimsa.
Yes.
That is also, you know, Swami has spoken in many contexts. So, you know, if we look at this chapter, for example, and if it's the first chapter of Prema Vahini, which is the Vahini of love, stream of love, Swami is actually telling us that what are the actions that we need to do and how we should do them. So, you know, that whole essence of viveka, what is viveka? Viveka is understanding of your true nature. See,
yes,
the love is very subtle. It is,
yes,
there underneath the words. So Swami is talking about how do we acquire viveka? Why do we need to acquire viveka? He says you need to acquire viveka because you don't have peace in the world today.
Yes.
Compared to all other yugas, compared to all other ages, there is no peace today. So if that viveka has to be cultivated, what is it that will kind of propel me? What is it that will kind of instigate that yearning in me to cultivate that viveka? Why should I cultivate viveka? I'm just living my life and going. So I think I'm just making a wild guess, mm-hmm, that in the chapters to follow, possibly Swami will start talking about that love for your true self.
Yes.
So prema or love for your true self, the only way love for your true self exhibits itself in daily life is through viveka.
Yes. By you always realizing what is permanent and what is not.
Exactly. Yeah, what is your true self?
What is your
true self? It's just that. So
yes.
What is your true self? And then if you are in constant love with your true self, how will your actions reflect that?
Yes. That is one perspective of, you know, you ruminating on Prema Vahini. Mm. When I think about it in another way,
yes,
I think this is the first message that Bhagwan wrote down,
right,
as far as we know. Perhaps there is many more that he has written down, but this is sort of which came in the Sanatan Sarthi and as a serial. And I think Bhagwan is just love. So, you know, it was love communicating. It was a stream of love given by love. From love.
Absolutely.
So it was, you know,
it's love all through.
It's love all through. The source. It was just a stream of love from love.
And also a caution.
Yes.
Swami says here, just because I am writing,
yes,
even if I am writing, just by reading it for time pass,
yeah,
nothing is going to stick.
Yeah. I think that's very powerful.
That last paragraph where he says that, you know, just by reading this book, see, what is the spirit with which he is writing this?
Yes.
See, that is making it so beautifully clear in this last paragraph. He says, I am not writing it for name and fame.
Yes.
I am not writing it to show that I am a scholar, I know and you don't know. It is to teach the good swabhava. And what are those good swabhava? He says, you can cultivate this good nature, good attributes, good behavior, good approach, attitude to life, through bhakti, nishkama seva, prarthana, vicharana, all these qualities, Swami says. And he says, it is to build interest in these qualities that all this spiritual literature has come about.
Absolutely. So, unless you make a serious attempt to put them into practice.
Exactly.
Otherwise, it just, as Bhagwan very beautifully says, it will just pass away with the passage of time.
Yeah. If you just spend time to read, it will be time spent. That's all.
Yes.
And nothing will stick.
In fact, you know, that reminds me, Sai Prakash, of one alumnus, Brother CBS Mani.
Yes.
You know, he finished his master's here.
Right.
And when he went on to get a job in a very prestigious company, so that company officials, they asked him, you know, you come from an university like the Satya Sai University,
right,
which is into principles, and you are brought up in an environment where there is so much of time spent in prayer and everything. Do you think you will adjust to this corporate environment? So he says, well, I have to and I will. He says, no, but do you think really you can live up to these principles? He said, yeah, I think I'm trained for it.
Right.
He said that, but you know, within his mind, he was just thinking, is it really difficult, you know, because there's so many people who are asking him that kind of questions. Do you think you can live up to the principles?
Do you think it's relevant? Do you think it's practical?
Practical.
Nice to speak about it on Vahini series.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So actually he went to one of his friends, you know, and he just shared, you know, everybody's asking me these questions. What do you think?
Right.
He said, see, it's very easy. It's very easy, actually.
Okay.
You know what you have to do? You just speak the truth. See, if you're all the time speaking the truth, then the person who has to get scared is not you, but the other person. Because this guy, they know that this guy will only speak the truth.
Correct.
If you speak false or if you compromise, then you'll be the person who will be scared all the time.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. So he said, don't worry, just speak the truth, that's all. Nothing to worry. And so that's how his corporate journey starts, and he's suddenly he finds himself in a team which is appraising the financing of a project.
Okay.
So the company is to invest in a foreign client, and so they need to get permissions from the RBI, from the Ministry of Finance, and they have to prepare a project appraisal report. And so it was sort of a very prestigious team, and he had just come into the office 3-4 months, and he didn't know how he, you know, ended up being part of that team. And so there were always sort of other members, younger members, who were sort of jealous of him also, you know, he was just picked up to be part of this team. And so, and somehow he became one of the key members of that team. And he was doing, you know, day and night these calculations. Basically, a project is appraised on the basis of return on investment. You know, how much is the company going to get? And return on investment is generally in percentages. So he had done all his calculations, and there was a deadline to be met, to be submitted to the RBI. And so his board approved his project appraisal report, and so it went to the RBI finally on the date. And somehow after he submitted, he just felt that I really need to check it again. So he checked the calculations again, and to his dismay, he found that he had actually overstated the return on investment by 20%.
Oh.
So the, if the return on investment was 10%, he had mentioned it as 12%.
Okay.
And, you know, he was now thinking whether to reveal this or not. It was a sort of a mistake. It was a mistake from his side. And so that conflict was going on, you know, should he... But nobody's ever going to know. They have, everyone has approved it. It has gone to the RBI. No one is ever going to know if any mistake was done. And he's just got into the company and, you know, he got... He happened to be in this prestigious team.
Correct.
Should he reveal this or not? But, you know, the thing is, he was telling, I just could not sleep, you know. I had done this mistake. And, you know, even having lunch, I was not able to do.
Right.
You know, this was bothering me so much. So one day... He went to his boss, and his boss also sort of said it's okay, you know, it's done, you know. But somehow, he said, if you want to go, you go and tell the higher ups, because his boss also did not want to be party to a mistake that is being done. Okay, so but he goes and he confesses. He says, this is what we have done. And the superior boss there, he's actually so appreciative of him owning that mistake, and he, they let it be. But, you know, he felt that, you know, okay, he stood for truth and all that, but his career is now going to take a downturn, you know, because he really has made such a blunder. And he says, 2.5 years later, when the company and the superior boss were looking for someone who will handle all the investments of the company, they called this guy.
Wow.
He's just 2.5 years into the company, and the boss calls him and asks him, you know, do you think you can handle this responsibility?
My goodness.
Only thing I want from you is, are you going to stay in this company for a reasonably good amount of time? Then we are happy to give you this.
Amazing.
I'm giving you half a day notice, think and tell me.
So amazing. So,
and of course, many years later, he asked them, why did you, I mean, I have just joined, why did you give me this opportunity? They said, it is the university from where you come from.
Wow.
And it is because of your courage and forthrightness to stand up to an oversight that you had done.
How amazing. How amazing. And you know, Viveka, in another sense, is also awareness, is knowledge. Okay, Swami is giving two examples of Angulimala and Ratnakara.
Yes.
See, they were in darkness. They were in ignorance.
Yes.
So, since they were in ignorance, they thought what they were doing is perfectly fine.
Yes.
Now, when they came to terms with Viveka, when Lord Buddha gave that Viveka to Angulimala, and when Narada gave Viveka to Ratnakara, when that wisdom came into them, then their whole life took a turn.
Yes. Yeah. I think there is, as Swami says, there is always light and darkness. I mean, darkness is basically absence of light.
Right.
So once the awareness begins, I think then you will know how to practice.
Exactly. So what has happened is, with these two people, moment they got that spark, that direction,
yes,
they relentlessly held on to that.
Held on to that.
And they practiced it with 100% conviction.
Absolutely.
See, the pursuit of perfection in everything that you do, if you are, you know, pursue perfection in every action of yours or in every small thing that you do, then it's very easy for the Lord to just switch it over.
Yes.
You already have that pursuit of perfection. You are relentless. You want to reach up. If I am a thief, let me be the best thief. If I am a dacoit, let me be the best dacoit.
Yeah.
In fact,
I think if that clarity is there, I mean, if that kind of diligence is there about
exactly,
ourselves.
Exactly. Yeah. So only thing is, they 100% believe in what they're doing.
Yes.
So that's, then God just switches you over.
Easy. As Swami once said, if someone is sleeping, you can wake them up.
True.
But if someone is pretending that is the most difficult
part.
Yeah, and I think that's when hard knocks of life will ultimately wake us up. Anyway, so we'll move on to the second chapter.
Yes.
So let's listen to the first paragraph of chapter 2 of Premavahini.
Granthapatana Ekagrata. Lokamuna Pustakamulu Chala Chaukainavi. Shastramulu, Gita, Upanishattulu, Puranamulu Ekkada Chusina Sulabhanga Dorukutunnavi. Guruvulaka కొరత లేదు. శిక్షణ ధారాళముగా చౌకగా లభ్యమగుచున్నది. అయితే జ్ఞానామృత సేవనము వలన కలుగు త్రేణుకులు మాత్రం ఏ వైపునా వినిపించటలేదు.
ప్రేమవాహిని చాప్టర్ 2. ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ టుడే బుక్స్ ఆర్ కన్వీనియంట్లీ అవైలబుల్ ఫర్ లో ప్రైసెస్. బి ఇట్ స్క్రిప్చర్స్, ద గీతా, ఉపనిషద్స్ ఆర్ ద పురాణాస్, ఆల్ దీస్ క్యాన్ బి ఈజీలీ ఫౌండ్ ఎవ్రీవేర్. There is no dearth of gurus either. Learning is available in plenty and is affordable. Yet from nowhere, the notes of satisfaction arising after having partaken the nectar of spiritual wisdom or jnana is heard.
Well, let's listen to the second paragraph also, because I think the thought process that Bhagwan is sharing in this first paragraph continues in the second.
Kondalu kondaluga padina ee pustakapu rasulu chuda chala vicharamagunu. Pustakamula meeda pai bhagamuna gatti guddato neyabadina bindunu daati jnanamu velupalaku vachutaledu. Kama, krodha, dvesha, ahankaramulane parvatamula aavali vaipunane paramatmudu daagi unnadu. Atulane pustakamula rasula venukane jnanabhaskarudu daagi unnadu. ఇట్టి గ్రంథములు దశ దిశలా వ్యాపించి ఉండియు మానవుడు నేటి వరకు సంస్కారము జ్ఞానము లేని వానరుని వలె సర్వత్రా కనిపించుతున్నాడు.
ద సైట్ ఆఫ్ మల్టిపుల్ హీప్స్ ఆఫ్ బుక్స్ ఈజ్ యాక్చువల్లీ అ మ్యాటర్ ఆఫ్ కన్సర్న్. ద విజ్డమ్ ఇన్ సైడ్ ద బుక్స్ ఈజ్ అనేబుల్ టు పెనిట్రేట్ ద హెవీ బైండింగ్ క్లాత్ ఆన్ ద ర్యాపర్ అండ్ ఎమర్జ్ అవుట్. గాడ్ ఈజ్ హిడెన్ బియాండ్ ద మౌంటైన్ రేంజెస్ ఆఫ్ లస్ట్, anger, hatred and ego. Similarly, the son of wisdom is hidden behind these huge heaps of books. Though these books have spread to all corners of the earth, still man today is seen to conduct everywhere bereft of culture and wisdom like an ape.
So here, you know, when Bhagwan says books are conveniently available everywhere for low prices, you know, I was just reminded of how, you know, towards the last 5-6 years of Bhagwan's earthly sojourn, and especially after the publication division of the Sadhana Trust started publishing discourses the next day.
Correct.
The discourses used to be available just for 2 rupees, you know, the previous day's discourse.
The booklet.
Mm. And really, to frankly share with you, I should always feel, I mean, we are paying 10 rupees to have a meal.
Mm.
2 rupees, we are getting such profound wisdom.
Right.
I used to always think like that this is what should be, you know, available. This is what should be 100 rupees here, because this is what is giving you peace of mind there. That is just filling your belly and you're happily, and that is actually priced much more.
Absolutely right. And see, when Swami says all these books are available in low prices, see, these two paragraphs are really so amazing, because you know, if you go back to the first chapter also, Swami says, according to the world, knowledge is power.
Yes.
So he says, knowledge is power. The world thinks that knowledge is power. If, you know, it was a very interesting discovery. I think last time when we were doing the earlier Shravanam Mananam series, somewhere in some context we read that Veda Vyasa was describing what will be the attributes of Kali Yuga.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And in one of that, he says, people who can speak, who can stand up on a platform and speak coherently and, you know, confidently, will be considered scholars. I mean, we are sitting and speaking right now, but
I know.
Not that we are claiming we are scholars. Nevertheless, what it means is that knowledge acquired from books, you know, the function of memory, for example, the importance of memory, like if you have read 100 books, you will be knowing more. And if you have read 1,000 books, you know more. Now, today, that is also not relevant because yes. It's all on the tip of the fingers.
Yes.
Google Guru is the ultimate guru. Like, you want anything, piece yes. of information, it's all there.
Yes.
So what happens to people who thought that they were very powerful because they were a repertoire of wisdom, of knowledge? They had a lot of knowledge, they like read a lot. Yes, unless that reflects in their daily life.
Yes.
I mean, if that knowledge and that understanding is visible, is, you know, seen in their day-to-day life, there's no point in having that knowledge.
If it is translated.
Translated, that's the word.
Yes.
That's the word. If it's translated to daily life,
yes.
and it's just knowledge, heap of knowledge, Swami says, no, it's of no use.
That's what. I think that's what Bhagwan is saying. I mean, you have all these spiritual texts, because in the previous chapter, Bhagwan very clearly says, all this I am saying, all this is written, only so that, you know, it is not for name and fame, it is not for exhibition of knowledge or erudition, it is so that there is transformation.
Exactly.
All this information is for transformation. And here again, Bhagwan is saying that, you know, now you not only have books, you also have gurus. Mm. And we have seen a proliferation of, you know, modern day gurus,
exactly.
thanks to everybody being so stressed and distressed about life. And and Swami says, learning also is available in plenty, online, offline. Today, you know, you can learn anywhere, anywhere. You can get the best of courses at your fingertips, as you said. Yet, Bhagwan is saying, nowhere can you hear those notes of satisfaction.
Trepu, in Telugu, what it means is the belch.
Belch, yes.
Like when you have food.
Yes.
Like he said, if you eat a mango, you'll get a mango belch.
Belch.
If you eat
yeah.
Whatever food
yes.
you eat, that belch you get.
Hmm.
So, it's a very important word here. Because it is not the taste that he's talking about.
Hmm.
The belch is an experience of having digested it.
Digested. Yeah. Belch comes only after you digested.
Belch is something that comes when you have digested your food.
Yes.
Or, you know, when it has gone into your stomach. That is when you belch. Like after having a sumptuous food.
Hmm.
Okay. Now, he's saying not only the act of eating is important, the act of actually digesting it.
Yes.
And then that translates to putting into practice.
Practice. Absolutely.
And then, you know, another very important concept that comes out here when you read this paragraph. So lovely, Swami says, the wisdom inside the books is unable to penetrate the heavy binding cloth on the wrapper and emerge out. So basically, you know, you go to a library and you have these fantastically bound books and you have, now they are all gone because it's all in the iPad or Kindle. I mean, there are in Kindle and in one iPad, you can have 400,000, how many of books you want. So that whole shelf space and that whole area is, you know, just saved. But what it also means is that books are only pointers to knowledge.
Yes.
See, that is, he says, the Jnana Bhaskara, the embodiment of wisdom, is behind these piles of books.
Yes.
Is not inside the piles of these books. It is behind the piles of these books. Now, this is a very, very interesting and very important observation here, because I think in several Upanishads, the analogy is given of, you know, a tree twig. And Swami has told that in many of his discourses as well. Swami says, if a mother goes to a child and says, you see that star?
Yeah.
That's a very important star. That
yes.
is the North Star or any specific
yes.
star if the mother is pointing out. And the child looks up and sees millions of stars. Okay, at least thousands of stars.
Yes, yeah.
And child asks, I mean, which one are you talking about? He says, you see that one which is next to that one which is next to that one. So he says, everything is next to the other one. Then the mother is wondering what to do. And then she looks out of the window and she sees a tree branch.
Yes.
And she says, now you see carefully, between the top branch and the lower branch, you can see one star. That is the star I'm talking about. Then child says, oh, that one, okay, I was not able to get it. Now Swami says that all the Upanishads, all the wisdom, Puranas, everything is just the tree branch.
Yes.
They just help you focus on the truth. They help you focus on what the reality is. The reality is not affected by these.
Yes.
These do not affect the reality. The reality is beyond. It is them and beyond them. That is the beauty.
Just like I think the Sakara and Nirakara worship.
Right.
Where the formless has taken this form, but the form is just a pointer.
Exactly.
Form is just a pointer.
See, the awareness, the complete awareness which the Lord is, that complete awareness is limited in consciousness. And through consciousness, you will have to go to that awareness.
Yes.
Consciousness cannot exist without awareness. But awareness is.
Yes.
Always.
Absolutely. Wow. I think what the observation that you made is so fantastic, where Bhagavan says it is not in the book, but right. It is behind.
He says the Jnana Bhaskara, the son of wisdom, is not in the books. He is beyond the mountains, heaps of books that.
Yes. Yes. I mean, and one has to overcome these mountain ranges of lust, anger, hatred and ego.
Just imagine going into the biggest library on earth, possibly Library of Congress or wherever, and seeing behind the library if there is. I'm just joking, but figuratively it's such a beautiful analogy Swami is given, that he says the light of wisdom is beyond the mountain of books. Yes. I mean, how poetic it is.
Yes.
It's so beautiful.
Wow. And it is sad, Swami says, that even though there is, you have books everywhere, but still today nobody is making that attempt to conduct according to what is there. And that's why you have all these restlessness and behavior that is not in accordance with human nature.
Exactly. And he says God is also hidden beyond the mountain ranges of, he says, just as God is hidden beyond the mountain ranges of Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada. He says, so also wisdom is hidden beyond this mountain, heaps of books.
In fact, I'm just reminded here of an anecdote related to Dr. Abdul Kalam.
Okay.
Because it's something to do with books.
Okay.
And, Mr. Srijan Pal Singh, he is someone who worked with Abdul Kalam.
I think we spoke about it in the last session.
In the last session. There was one story. This is another interesting story.
Wonderful.
Where Dr. Kalam, being a scientist, he used to take anything he used to listen about religion, he used to evaluate it on the altar of reason because he's a scientist.
Right.
But at the same time, because he had the heart of a saint, his altar of reason and judgment was not just confined to the proven facts. It was broad because he had the heart of a saint. And so one day the Srijan Pal Singh asked him, so what is the correct way to serve any religion? And Kalam then gives a very interesting story, which is a real life anecdote, where in May 1998, India had just conducted 5 nuclear tests successfully, and they had done that in Pokhran, which is the a place in the Thar Desert, and there the climate is like 50 degrees Celsius. And on their way back, suddenly Kalam and his friend Dr. K. N. Rai, they suddenly see this village, because it is a completely deserted road and you don't find any habitation there actually. Suddenly they see this village. And the village name is Bhadariya, Bhadariya village, near Pokhran. And so, and it looked like there is an ashram there. So they were very surprised. They go inside the ashram and there they find that actually that ashram is something so different than everything around it. It was green, it was in the middle of the desert, but looked like so flush with greenery and like an oasis there. And the head of the ashram was one Babaji.
Okay.
And so that Babaji greeted them And then, you know, after the exchange pleasantries, he said, I have a unique library here.
Okay.
And so they go to the library there. And once they go there, it is an underground chamber. There they see that that chamber was remarkably cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the way it was happening was because the architectural design of the building was such that, you know, it was keeping that place cool.
Mm.
And that had nearly 2 lakh books.
Okay.
Of different subjects, different languages, different historical periods. And it was naturally air conditioned. And there were books which are 100 years old. And it had all the traditional knowledge from ages. And when they were going through all that, in the middle of all that, suddenly this man comes and gives them delicious fresh milk. And they're even more surprised. Where do you get milk now in the desert? And then he says, he takes them to a place where he's rearing so many cows there. Then how did you, you know, get cows here? How are you doing all this here? And then he says, you know, all these cows are actually ostracized by the villagers because they said these cows cannot produce milk. But I studied and then I learned how to make these cows productive. And now you see such beautiful milk they are delivering. And so everyone is very surprised. They said, how do you get so much of greenery here? You know, how do you get fodder for these cows? And then he says, you know what, these villagers here, they were into a lot of bad habits and, you know, drinking and intoxicants, liquor, tobacco and all that. I actually changed them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And after that, they have become partners with me.
Oh.
And they, and nearly, and this whole movement has spread to nearly 70 villages. Mm-hmm. And they have all contributed in making this place green. Okay. They have planted lakhs of trees.
Wow.
And he says, they have dug the tube wells, they have done agriculture, and it is they who are creating fodder, and they are, thanks to them, that we have now, you know, this greenery, and this cows, and this medicines, and there are a lot of, in these books, there are a lot of herbal medicines, so they are all very surprised. The final question to him was, from where did all this knowledge about local herbs, and cow rehabilitation techniques, and everything, where did you get all this? He says, he points to that underground cellar and he says, everything is there.
Sweet.
From there. Mm.
See, but, so he had the books and he also digested
them. He also digested. That's what I felt. It was something, you know, very beautiful. On a very practical plane, you know, I mean, Bhagavan says, what is the point of all the knowledge if it cannot be utilized for benefiting your fellow men?
And, you know, that was a constant topic when Swami would select to, you know, PhD topics.
Yes.
You say, how is it useful to society? No point in doing PhD or research on a topic which, you know, is not relevant to what people need and society needs.
Yes.
I mean, just to show your knowledge or your understanding, it's not useful. And, you know, another thing which comes to my mind is, I have heard Swami say many times, you know, in fact, when he used to talk to the students who have just passed out from the university and who are still waiting for a job opportunity or looking around and waiting for Swami, Swami would say, go and start small-scale industries.
Yes.
I will help you. I will help you set up small-scale industries.
Yes.
And he was so passionate about that.
Yes.
That, you know, go work hand in hand with the villagers. Make them, you know, empower them.
Empower them.
Let them, you know, have confidence in themselves. You can do wonders.
Yes.
And this Sai Seva, which has started, it's like a, I think, call center with local. They recruit a lot of local people.
Yes.
That's a good example.
Yes.
And I'm sure there are a lot of such NGOs doing a lot of such good work. But Swami was always very supportive of that.
Yes. In fact, I think, and that is the reason why. If you see, especially even if I see my own classmates, at least, you know, I would say even at least 25%, 25-30% of them, you know, after being in the job for like 10-12 years,
okay,
all are now ready to, you know, start their own firms. And, and they take the plunge.
Okay, but that's interesting.
Yeah, I think that is something very, very encouraging because, you know, ultimately you feel that I can make a huge difference. Now I've learned the ropes of the game. I can make a huge difference.
Mm.
Lead, you know, build not just employees, but build families. If I can really put everything that I've learned, I have more opportunity to put into practice everything that I've learned.
In fact, there was this very interesting TED talk which I saw, which was, it had a very interesting name, Ugly Indian or something.
Mm-hmm.
The Ugly Indian, or I'm not getting the exact name, something to that effect. initially you think, oh my God, this guy is so anti-India. And he's like talking about why we don't mind seeing dirt on the road. Indians, you know, we live in harmony with all the dirt on the road. Mm. And then, so I think, why is he speaking that way? But then he goes on to what he actually wanted to say. They have done experiments in Bangalore, okay, where they say there is no point in pointing fingers. You cannot say municipal fellows have to come and clean. You can't say this fellow, that fellow. You want it to be clean, you take the first step.
Yes.
And even if you just sweep and then go, it's going to get dirty again. You have to present it in such a way, you have to have a complete alternative to that.
Yes.
Where will they throw the this thing, the waste material? How will they dispose it and maintain that, you know, repaint it and redo that place in such a way, then it will stay like that forever. The moment you paint it and you make it clean, then people start to say, oh, this place we are not supposed to spit, this place we are not. See, instead of just putting stickers on the do not spit, spit here, if you clean it, it will resonate with the good sense of people. And they say, oh my God, somebody has taken effort. Oh, maybe not here. I should not spit here.
Yes. Yeah, I think absolutely. What also reminds me students trying to follow these directions of Swami to serve society.
Right.
You know, especially in the MBA days, I remember when Bhagwan used to say that, you know, after you get a job, try to stay in the job like for, you know, 4 or 5 years. Don't just do mindless job hopping.
Exactly.
And, when I was speaking to one classmate of mine, you know, he was sharing that when he actually joined a job, and he was part of one team where they're supposed to create a new electronic banking product.
Okay.
And there were 5 people in that team.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had, you know, set their timelines and they were supposed to deliver in 4 or 5 months. And so among the 5, there was one boss and 4 employees. And just 15 days into the project, one of them left.
Okay.
2 days later, another guy left. Another 2 days, the third guy left. And everyone gave, you know, various reasons, like, you know, somebody said better offer, somebody said some family issue and everything. But ultimately, the competitor had hired them. And the moment one guy went, he just pulled the others.
Okay.
And now the boss and only this guy were left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the boss calls this guy and says, you know,
do you also want to leave?
And at that point in time, you know, this boy, his name is Venkatraman, he said that my master, you know, he had told me that, you know, when you join a job, you should be committed at least for some time.
Right.
So I'm going to be here.
Mm.
And so ultimately, they had to roll out the product because they had, you know, committed to the customers and clients. So 2 people did the job of 5 people.
My God.
And you know, from morning like 8 to night 11, they used to work for the next 3-4 months.
Mm.
And they actually delivered the product. It was a success.
Wow.
And, you know, he says after everything, you know, when after life returned to normalcy.
Mm.
So one day, you know, this boss called him, you know, just for an tea outside. And then he says, you know, whenever I think about that moment, I don't know if anyone else in your position would have done that.
Mm.
He says, I mean, I have seen, his boss is an experienced person. Well, I have seen, like, for decades, I have seen guys. I have seen intelligent guys.
Correct.
I have seen brilliant guys.
Mm.
But actually, at that point, he also got that offer.
Mm.
Okay, they were pulling him. Okay, he says, I can never think of anyone else who could have taken that decision.
Mm.
And he says, your Sai Baba will be very proud of you.
Wow. That's it. I mean,
yeah. So ultimately, you know, ultimately putting the knowledge into practice is what Bhagwan mentions. And I think that is when you will have the belt of satisfaction.
And that's what started off this whole conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You think we have time for another paragraph?
Maybe,
I think we can do one paragraph.
Maybe we'll just listen to that.
Okay, let's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
లోకములో పెక్కుమందిని పుస్తకములపై నుండు అందమైన బైండింగ్ చక్కని బొమ్మలు ఆకర్షించును. ఇక జ్ఞానమునకేమి కొరత? ఇట్టి క్షణభంగురమైన తృప్తికి చోటిచ్చి పావనమైన కాలమును పవిత్రమైన జీవితమును పాడు చేసుకున్నట్టకన్నా చదివినవి కన్న విన్న సద్గుణములను వివేకమార్గమును అనుష్ఠించి అందలి ఆనందమును సత్యమును గ్రహించిన ఎంత ధన్యులు కావచ్చును. అయితే పరమార్థమును పొందగోరువారు మహాత్ముల జీవిత గ్రంథములు భగవచ్చింతన అభివృద్ధి చేయు గ్రంథములు పఠింపవలయనే కాని తక్కినవన్నీయూ చదివి తిక్కలు పట్టించుకొనిన ఇందులో ఎవరికి ఏమి ఆనందము, మనసునకి ఏమి శాంతి.
The beautiful binding and captivating pictures of a book attracts many. But what about the wisdom in it? Instead of losing sacred time and debasing holy life in momentary pleasures, if one can assimilate the noble qualities that are learnt, seen and heard, and follow the path of discrimination, one would thereby derive bliss and grasp the truth. How fulfilling will such lives be? Therefore, those who seek the Supreme should strive to read only the life stories of enlightened beings, and such are the texts that lead one towards the contemplation of the Divine. Instead, if one indulges in reading all and sundry and going crazy, what happiness can it bestow on anyone? What peace can the mind derive?
There's a continuation on the books.
Yeah.
This is a bad chapter for the librarians. But it's so beautiful. Again, you know, Swami's talking about external versus internal. And he says, just because the book has got great binding and, you know, wonderful picture on top, is that important or is the content inside important? And, you know, if you just extend this analogy to everything in the world today,
yes,
it can apply to anything.
Pravritti and nivritti.
Exactly. No, the outer, I mean, you see, it's so attractive, it's so yes. grand, it's so colorful, it appears to be happy, it appears
yes.
to be
yes.
This thing. But what is there inside?
Like everyone's pictures on Facebook is...
It's very, always very happy. And
very
people,
happy.
In fact, you know, I'm digressing a little bit,
yeah.
but I can't help but say it. You know, there is this beautiful series of videos produced, which is, you know, available on Netflix.
Okay.
This is called Dark Mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Although the production quality is excellent and all that, the whole concept, each episode is a new concept. And they tell you of how technology rules, you know, say like a futuristic kind of fiction where technology rules you. And every episode has a very, very deep, powerful significance and meaning. And the way they have presented it is excellent. So I was seeing one few days back in which people have to rate others. So everybody has a device in their hand. And the moment I meet you, and suppose we have spoken one sentence, based on that one sentence, I will rate you from 1 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You are 4.2, if I say. So that's a good score. But mm-hmm. suppose I speak to you, and you don't like the conversation, you just put it at 2.8, or you put 1.5. So you have to start building points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so everybody has got this device, and I mean the conceptualization was so fantastic, so amazing. So you start building. Now suppose you are coming and speaking to me, and you tell me, oh, your face looks like a dog. And then I can't even say, so is yours. Because I know you'll put at 1.5 or 2.8. You'll say, oh, that's so kind of you.
Thanks for the compliment.
Thanks for the compliment. I never knew you were so creative in your imagination. So what happens is, you are not saying what you believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying something totally different, and you're being artificially nice to everybody in the world.
Yes.
And that's exactly what was brought out in that episode. Of course, it goes on into a different story and all that, but the whole concept was really so interesting. It is like what is on the outside and versus what is in the inside. If there is a device that could measure what is in the inside, then that is worth having.
Yes.
That is really worth having.
Absolutely. Wow.
So I think that's what Bhagavan is saying here. You know, you're losing your sacred time
right.
in momentary pleasures.
Did he say that? I missed that.
Very instead thing. Of losing sacred time and debasing holy life in momentary pleasures.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, so that is where Swami is saying, so as you are saying, you have to cultivate what is needed inside. So that's where Swami said, you have to assimilate the noble qualities that you are, you know, reading or seeing or hearing.
So basically Swami is comparing the momentary pleasures to the outside
of the book.
Captivating yes. images of the book. Right,
yes.
right, correct.
Yes. So what about the wisdom? That's what Bhagavan is saying. And only if, you know, it comes back to Viveka, because Swami says, only when you assimilate those qualities,
correct,
then you will follow the path of discrimination, which is Viveka.
Right, right.
Then you will get bliss. Then you'll be able to grasp the truth.
Wonderful. And then he says, reading the lives of Mahatmas.
Yes.
And any literature that develops contemplation on God.
Yes.
Is ennobling, yeah. is good.
I think that is again something very interesting because, you know, I have seen this in many places.
Mm-hmm.
On one occasion when the warden asked Swami, okay. what are the books that students should study? Because, you know, there were some students who were studying all kinds of books.
Right.
So the warden had objection to some of the books that they were reading. And, you know, they said, we are fine with it. What is wrong with this book? And so the warden also did not know, you know, what is the guideline.
Okay.
About what should be read and what should not. And when he asked Swami, what is the kind of books that students should read? Swami very clearly said, you should read the lives of saints and enlightened beings.
Right.
And I think that's what Swami had told even earlier. If you see some of the conversations with, you know, the Kuppam family and in the early interactions with devotees. Even there, you know, when they're, especially with Ranima, with Mrs. Rani yes. Subramaniam, there yes. also, you know, because she's doing a lot of spiritual practices and everything. Swami says, don't read all that because, you know, different people will say different things.
Correct.
You will only get confused. Swami says, if you want to read the lives of saints, because, you know, from their life journey, you will get a sense of how a devotee's life is going to be.
Beautiful.
So that will give you inspiration. But don't read, you know, different gurus, different ways, because that will only make you
confused.
Your mind a muddle.
Very important, because, you know, I met a friend in Delhi, and we were just talking, and he says, hey, I'm very worried for you, man. I asked him why. He says, you know, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. Are you sure about what you're doing? What if you're wrong? I mean, I'm very safe with my life. I always distribute my interests and so, you know.
Diversify the risks.
Diversify. No, if this guru doesn't help me, at least that God will save me. If that God doesn't save me. I said, see, it's not like that. Unless the root goes deep, the tree is not going to survive.
Yes.
So you have to go deep. There's no point in, you know, just having multiple options. Yes. It's not a multiple option. Life is not a multiple option.
Yes.
And so you have to go deep. Yes. And only when you go deep, anything will reach you to the same goal.
Yeah.
It will reach you.
Yeah. In fact, you know, that reminds me, you know, earlier also, I think we have discussed this, or Swami mentions in one of, perhaps in Sandhya Nivarani, where, you know, he says, Swami, what about all these gurus? You know, that guru told me to do this and that, you know, teacher told me and that guru turned out to be not a genuine one. And then Swami said, why are you finding fault with that guru? You know, did you do what he asked you to do? You know, see, if you are true to yourself.
Correct.
So basically, if that guru had told you to chant, you know, you chant. Chant with faith.
That will save you.
That will save you.
Very beautiful.
So I think, as you mentioned, that depth is what is needed. I think if we have faith in ourselves, then that bliss will automatically happen. And Bhagavan very clearly says here, I think that we have to study the lives of saints and enlightened beings. And today is actually the birthday of Swami Vivekananda.
Oh, is it?
January 12th.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, I thought, There is one, you know, quote of Swami Vivekananda.
I see you having a book of Swami Vivekananda in your hand.
Yes.
So you want to read.
I want to read because this is very, very powerful quote of Swami Vivekananda.
Sure.
Because just before this program, you know, I was when Bhagwan mentioned enlightened beings, and I thought we should talk about some enlightened being, and it just appeared
nice.
That it happens to be Swami Vivekananda's birthday.
Nice.
And, you know, because today the whole discussion is about putting into practice.
Right.
And here, Swami Vivekananda, he says that only one idea was burning in his brain, you know,
mm-hmm.
when he was, you know, after he returned from the US.
Right.
There was only one idea, how to start a machine for elevating the Indian masses, you know. He was so passionate about mm-hmm. doing something for the country.
Mm.
And he says, may I be born again and again and suffer thousands of miseries so that I may worship the only God that exists. The only God I believe in, who is the sum total of all souls, my God the wicked, my God the miserable, my God the poor of all races, of all species. This is the God who is the special object of my worship.
My goodness.
I think, you know, if you see the focus of Swami Vivekananda, it was all about putting it into practice. It was all about going out and reaching out and making a difference in the lives of those people where it matters.
In fact, as you're reading that, you know, that powerful segment of a discourse where Swami is speaking in the Bangalore Super Speciality Hospital,
yes.
you know, in the inauguration function, Swami says, Bidhar Sevane Rama Seva. Service to the poor is service to Rama. He says, I am telling you today, I will go to the extent of giving up my life in the service of these poor. Because that is what is worth doing. May all of you cultivate 1,000,000th. He says, try to cultivate 1,000,000th or 1,000th of this approach which I am exemplifying in my life.
Wow. In fact, that's what Swami Vivekananda also says. He says, if my entire life is spent in giving the whole world at least a glimpse of what my master is, then my life would have not gone in vain. And that is by putting these things into practice, which is like making a difference.
Exactly.
Today, I think the theme for the drama by the higher secondary schools was Surgadapi Garisi, you know, love for motherland.
Right.
Motherland. And we have seen that, you know, I think, you know, all these enlightened beings trying to inculcate that into us so forcefully. It's really amazing. I think really there is nothing more inspiring than reading the lives of all these enlightened people. And you read the life of Vivekananda, read the life of Shankaracharya. I mean, at the age of, like, when they were in the 30s, they achieved so much.
Absolutely.
It is only because I think, you know, they were able to assimilate whatever was came to them through their gurus and through their masters. Wonderful. So I think on that note, perhaps we'll conclude today's discussion. Swami actually very beautifully says that instead of reading the lives of all these great saints, if you indulge in reading all and sundry, you'll only go crazy.
Right.
What peace can you derive? So I think there is so much of food for thought for all of us about how to spend that time.
Correct.
So that, you know, in the first chapter, Bhagavan says this is the most important, human birth is the most precious, and here, I mean, very clear guideline as to how to spend this time for our uplift.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So with that, dear listeners, it's time to draw the curtains on this last segment of Thursday Life. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. We offer our humble salutations of gratitude at the lotus feet for this opportunity to share his love and his message. And to you, dear listeners, thank you so much for your feedback, for your comments. As always, keep writing to us. Our email ID is listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much. Saram.
You were listening to an episode of our program, Vahini Satsang. This episode was first aired on the 12th January 2017 as part of Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.